Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Molly Prosser. Molly Prosser is an editor and content strategist for e-tailers and internet startups. She holds an MFA in creative writing from Carleau University, where she taught literature, marketing, writing, and communication. Her work has appeared in Weave Magazine, Blast Furnace, Sugared Water, and Soundings Review. Her full-length collection, entitled Rubbernecking, was published in 2016 by Word Poetry. Hi, Molly. How are you?
Hi, Jan. I'm great. Very happy to be here.
Yeah, we're happy to have you from Oakland, California.
Yes.
Which is a long way, but that's where you live now.
Yes, that's where I live now. I miss Pittsburgh.
Yeah, we miss you. But congratulations on your book, Rubbernecking. That's a really great accomplishment.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay, so you're going to read from there?
Yep.
Okay.
Good for you. My sister and I would dare each other at the dinner table, once we sucked the chicken from the bone, to eat the white knuckle joints. There's a bump on the roof of my mouth where I cut my gums trying to win. The last to the marrow had to eat it. Standing in line at 4 a.m. in the Hong Kong airport, waiting for a bowl of something you can't name, 37 hours since your last meal, it's good to know true hunger. It's good to let your body get so hungry that you remember you're nothing special. You're nothing but a break-it-down machine. It's good to know the taste of bone so you can miss it. Jogging. There's nothing but the evil in and out of January air, the rhythmic thud of sneaker to sidewalk on quiet Sundays, the Pittsburgh gray sticking in my lungs, burning from bronchioli to brain, as a white cat with no ears licks the tires of a white car in someone's concrete driveway. The hooves of aluminum reindeer point to the sky, their mutilated half bodies resting behind the Sunoco station. The Blockbuster video manager, a Tom Arnold lookalike, the one who asked me once if I lived alone and, like David Lynch, empties the night drop box. Almost. I'm doing laundry to the soundtrack of Bombay Dreams on a smoky corner of Liberty Avenue. My life is littered with mismatched socks, saucerless cups, single chopsticks, pierogies in Little Italy, Bollywood and Bloomfield. I shuffle a suitcase of dirty sheets down the street. It used to be easy to predict the future by looking at the back of my hand, reading the gridwork of blue pushing through my pale skin. I remember the confidence of young fingers in the bed of an olive El Camino at twilight creeping over the length of a boy. The sloshing of the washing machine makes me smile, and I know it's biological. I wonder what's inside a man, if I should fear it, what I've released in the past. I read the confusion of freckles above my wrist, like drunken tea leaves at the bottom of a chipped china cup. They all drown in my head, die suffocating and undignified deaths, the men in the laundromat who watch me folding. They choke on their 40s, and no one comes to their funerals. They make me think of buttons, loosened by the wash, tethered by one limp thread. Resolutions from Liverpool. This will be the year I learn to live alone. I'll throw away plastic forks. I'll use more paper towels. I'll buy wine with screw tops. The smell of grease will stop making me sick. I'll eat chips and pasties and puddings without considering the cholesterol. I'll scream pornographic phrases at passing men. I'll wear tank tops nonstop. I'll start the year climbing up Hope Street in a sloppy snowfall. I'll take a shortcut through the shell of a bombed-out church, get a chipped naan from the Punjabi nightclub, take a shower in a bathroom that's not mine. I've always been too prissy for my own good.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Molly Prosser, reading from her new book, rubbernecking. Molly, I want to ask you about sort of the details in your poems, because it seems like no matter what the poem's about, it seems like we always get the what's in the vicinity, you know, like the El Camino, the restaurant down the street, the soundtrack, I like that kind of description, but it seems really a big part of your work. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's something wonderfully beautiful and sometimes strangely grotesque about the minutiae of details. I love that. I like the idea of painting a picture or like a mise-en-scene for a poem and just letting the reader sit inside of it. So that means they have to know everything that's there. And I don't try to pass judgment on it. I just want to say that it's here. This is what's here. This is what's happening. And of course, I have a perspective, but I also want them to be able to live there with me and sit inside it with me. So I try to be as descriptive as possible because it's those details that fascinate me. I think are interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you started to answer the other question I had, which was, you may not be passing judgment, but you're making a choice of detail, like putting David Lynch in instead of somebody else. And mm-hmm. David Lynch is a very particular choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when you make those choices in poems, I'm thinking that you're making them to serve the poem, but is there also, you know, part of you that I want to put David Lynch in a poem,
mm-hmm.
Or how do you negotiate that?
Yeah, there are definitely bits of detail or reality that I hang on to that I like, and when I have a poem that it'll fit, I squeeze it in there. That's for sure. Because, like I said, I get attracted to just little pieces of something, a scene that I see or something that I hear, and I'll hold on to it until it's right.
Has that always been something that fascinated you as a writer from the beginning of your writing?
Absolutely. And I think it's a big part of my process, too. I'll constantly take little notes on scraps of paper and keep them in binders. And then all of a sudden, I find out I've got like binders full of little scraps of paper that I then puzzle piece together. And I know that's not... it's not always the way I do it. And I know that that's not a usual way of doing it. But I find that that's the way my process is. I have little pieces and then I tie them all together.
Okay. Could you read some more?
Yeah, absolutely. This one's called Consumption. In Vegas, the hookers have business cards with their pictures and prices of tricks and hire bored Latina women to push them on tourists as they leave the buffets. They snap the corners of the cardstock, index finger to thumb, or slap the pack on the fat of their palms to get the men to look, to make eye contact. Jet planes bisect the glittering strip, making incisions on the monochrome sky, stitching the numbers of the cheapest hotels, the biggest blackjack tables. The skin on my forehead fissures from the pollution, my fingers prune from the chlorine. This is a shotgun town, and I want to get married for the free drinks. If I'm not careful, I'll get everything I want. Our limo swerves to miss the smackhead in the street, his pupils devouring his eyes, and that's really the best we can do. Back in the valley. Brandy with an apricot gets dusty on the shelf in Rite Aid, Van Nuys, California. I brush away the film, give it a good home. It's been 4 years since I felt the skin of pollution. I remember where to buy the best homemade salsa, the cheapest car wash, El Pollo Loco. This time, I'm a tourist. I say hello to the valley, Laurel Canyon at dusk, watching from the overlook as San Fernando fights off the night. It was always a fight in LA. Parking spots, wrinkles, Scientologists. Trying on a sunburn again, I remember the sin of tan lines. I was always fine with pale skin, but this city can make anyone insecure. Even the cell phone towers look like palm trees or redwoods, and only the layers of pavement keep the desert from moving. On my lunch breaks, I used to watch the Armenian men gather at Glendale Park to slam dominoes on the concrete tables. I felt safe listening to that solid sound. Walking from Venice. If the unicyclists and churro sellers and hard-bodied muscle men and rainbows of glass marijuana pipes and Virgin Mary conch shell candles become as ordinary as newspapers, you can stop at the rows of swing sets rising from the sand just before the Santa Monica Pier. It's worth one quick ride, back and forth, watching the boardwalk disappear, then reappear, just beyond your flip-flops. It will make you think of swinging in your grandparents' backyard, rocking the cheap tin poles in and out of their post holes. You can almost feel the thick hand on the small of your back, making, then breaking, contact. Climbing higher, pulling the chains harder against your chest, it becomes easier to escape the ground. You begin to feel safe at the top of the arc, spiteful of the descent. California will become cold, digestible, a place made for leaving. Carpooling. Inching up the 101, we watch a fat rat climb the trunk of a long palm. She's cooking a couple kids in her gut. This night, the breeze is cool off the desert. We're eating exhaust and watching her bloated belly drag along the palm bark. She looks like a hard-boiled egg ready to crack. She's struggling, concentrating as she pulls her fat load to the top of the palm. She's got a nest up there, we guess, in the dead fronds that refuse to fall. I pull into the diamond lane. There are two of us on the way home from the strip, our Jeep full of hustler porn and fast food. The wind sifts through the open windows, and finally, we're moving. In the moonlight, I can just make out the yellow gleam of her two pointed teeth. I wonder if she had a car, an SUV, if she would drive in the diamond lane. She's got a pile of passengers inside her, squirming. Surely the LAPD would let her be. The pregnant, the split personalities, the working dogs, the Siamese twins, the haunted, the psychic, do they ride in the diamond lane? Who's to say when we're alone?
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Molly Prosser, reading from her book, Rubbernecking. I'm so glad you read that poem because I had written down on my little page here, rat palm fronds. I'm like, what's the name of that poem? I want to hear that poem. And
yeah, it's one of my favorites.
Yeah, I love that poem. And it made me think of something else that you do in your work, which is traveling. And I don't mean traveling to California, but traveling in the poem, the interweaving that you do between details. Because in that one poem you have rat, eggs, diamond lane, you have hustle porn, you have the strip, you have moonlight, SUVs, you know, it's kind of amazing how much traveling you do in your poetry. So can you talk about that? I mean, I guess it relates to details, but how you think about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, I think it does go back to the details for me. I want to create a scene, and in particular, I wanted to create the scene of sitting in traffic at dusk in California, and there's nothing else to look at but the dying trees and the exhaust, but it's also beautiful.
I can see why you moved there, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, LA's rough. But it's also beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful sunsets and beautiful nights, and there's nothing better than that heat, and finally the wind moves in and it cools you down. So I really wanted to capture that. And that's how I do it. I do it by stacking up multiple details so that you can, again, be right there. But also the underlying idea it has to come into, and sometimes that's completely different than the scene,
mm-hmm.
right? So in this case, it's about loneliness and mm-hmm. togetherness and what it means to be, you know, alone in a car or alone with someone or, you know, being in a couple or whatever that baggage might be.
Yeah, I mean, that's the second time you've referenced opposites. I mean, something being beautiful and terrible. Is that something that you try to collide in your work?
Absolutely. Uh-huh. That's fascinating to me, how things can be grotesque, but also just really beautiful. It always brings a tear to my eye when I think about Los Angeles, because I just dislike it so much, but it also is such a meaningful place to me. You know, some of my favorite people in the world are there and some of my favorite places. But really, I don't like it, and it's never been a place for me, and I keep trying to make it mm-hmm. that. I definitely live, and a lot of my work lives in that space of, you know, love and disgust.
I mean, it's also reminding me of what you said about all the little pieces of paper. You're talking about stacking details, and when you said that, I thought of all the little pieces of paper. So I don't know if you can tell us this, but when you have all those pieces, then how do you get from those pieces to a poem?
Sometimes magic, but usually not.
Oh, okay, we'll do that. Yeah, okay.
No. So those pieces, it's not even just like a notebook full of little ideas or short pieces. It's also cataloged specifically around different topics and ideas and thoughts. So if I've got, say, loneliness.
Cataloged.
Yeah, absolutely. So if I want to talk about loneliness, or say I'm sitting in traffic and I think about loneliness, then I'll go to my little file of ideas that I've had a detail and I thought, oh, that's a very lonely detail. And I've put it in there and I see if it works with the mm-hmm. scene. And I do that quite often.
Wow. Yeah. I've never heard that. Okay. Can you read some more?
Yeah. Port Macquarie, New South Wales. The heat moved into our room on violent bird song and nightmares. I rose naked to pull the blinds, turn on the fan, and got caught in the cacophony of screaming parrots. It was like underwater techno, electronic nuances only machines could produce. Staring at the strangler figs outside our window, I listened to your shallow breathing, the terrifying warbles, the new murmur of night. Bedtime story. It's sappy, like a Hallmark card or a slow dance song, but there are a million colors of dawn and dusk, and I want to see them all with you in the back of a Volkswagen bus. I got nowhere, stuck in a Hilton in Cleveland, watching Murder, She Wrote and documentaries on wild horses, waiting for other people to sort out the helix of our bones. So I ordered Chinese food for three and thought about how I needed to meet a man like you. The land of room enough and time enough isn't enough for me. I want every place imprinted with our movements. I want a trick of Venn diagram, and land is just a character in our morality play, a piece of flesh to be devoured, a John Ford drama. I know to be American is to be male, the breezy openness of it all, but they tell women a secret when we're born here. They whisper it while we sleep. Only the rocks are real, and they callous our hearts until the veins are black knots we can never untangle. I'll show you what you need to know about this place. It's so many things you can't see. It's romance in the West. It's men who kill horses and eat the insides of clocks to keep the time from passing. It's a lot like drowning. It's over-medication, a Puritan work ethic, and private compulsions. It's travel that makes you conscious of borders. It's half hidden in the thunderstorm of a New Mexico night, half in the smile of a boy selling sticks of double mint at the underpass, and everything's up for discussion. We've met the angel of departure, and since there's no proof that this is a fairy tale, it must be true. This country is the big open brunt of it. Cottonwood trees swallowing up the rivers, cornfields disappearing under the weight of the stars, strip malls and car dealerships are enchanted forests, are junkyards of love. Love poem with Blackjack. I'm standing at a carving station in the downtown Detroit casino, listening to a Motown cover band in sequined lycra, belt R-E-S-P-E-C-T, as the stench of warm meat seeps into my jean jacket. I'm just waiting for you to get done with the blackjack so we can cruise Greektown and find a little dive with plastic olive vines and checkerboard tablecloths, get high in the alley before the appetizer and laugh at the flaming cheese. I placed a bet on a roulette wheel earlier tonight just to hear the tickety-tack. But you know I always lose, like the liver-spotted ladies in sweatpants who push in quarters and rub their rosary beads for a line of sevens. Just behind the kosher franks, past the penny slots and keno tables, I see your fingers pull at the air, calling, "Hit me." And I want to tell you that this is America. You might just get lucky.
I'm wondering if your poetry has changed since you've been living in California, or if you feel anything shifting in your work.
Absolutely. This collection, it's entitled Rubbernecking for a reason. It's this constant looking back, of leaving places and looking back, and not necessarily regretting leaving, but definitely obsessed with the idea of looking at what was left, looking what's behind. And I've stopped doing that. I've definitely stopped doing that. I've been a lot more fascinated with the details in the space and not so much with the longing or the yearning to be somewhere else, which I think is predominant in this collection.
Okay. And I mean, you have some California poems in here. Mm-hmm. Should we expect more California poems, do you think?
Probably. I can't get away from it.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like one of the obsessions.
I know. I can't get away from it. It's a love-hate relationship that I keep exploring, mm-hmm. me and California.
But yeah.
Yeah. So we'll probably see more.
Okay, good. So I love the Venice Beach poem.
Thanks.
A lot. Yeah. Okay. We have time for a few more.
Okay. Devilfish. In a vendor's stall at La Bufadora, the devilfish clutch the wooden beams, the stiff, dead cartilage of the stingray exposed. And I can't help thinking that it's hard to hide the deep down, and soon we'll shed our feathery bodies, and everyone will see what's left, what's worth 5 pesos and a cold corona. My ex-boyfriend's ex-drummer used to live in Texas, above a fortune cookie factory. He told me that they fold them up in those half moons with big steam machines. Thick almond fog belches off the presses, blows clouds of paper fortunes into the orange-lit alley behind his apartment. In the morning, the slips of paper would stick to his shoes. He'd pull them off on the bus, one by one, soggy visions of what could be. The polar bears of Hershey Park. My older cousin Pat showed me how to snake my arm into the claw machine at the Hershey Park arcade. You make your hand skinny, tuck your thumb into your palm, and push it slowly past the plastic flap. Fists full of synthetic fur, I fished out stuffed polar bear after polar bear. We shoved them down our shirts and tried to play it cool. The story was that we'd won the bears, that I found a $5 bill in the park and Pat won them all for me. Everyone told him he was so grown up turning into a real man. That night in bed, I kissed each bear goodnight and listened to Pat make out with his girlfriend on the porch. Through the threadbare curtains, I watched him tuck his thumb and snake his fingers up the back of her Billy Idol t-shirt. Nesting. She thinks about the puffins hidden in the clutches of the black cliffs outside Reykjavik, huddled, alighting for haddock or herring as soft-spoken, thick-bearded men in their blinds cast nets to catch them, trap them mid-flight. They swallowed the chum from schooners, the plankton spewed from humpback feasts, gorging themselves until they were too fat to fly back to the volcanic shore and feed their hungry chicks. She considers the killdeer, faking a broken wing, protecting her nest from poachers, cooing and limping around her pile of rocks to distract her attackers, eggs rocking slightly in the stones at the edge of the cracked parking lot. The raccoons are close, sick of dumpster scraps, craving the crack of the speckled shells, the thick golden yolk. She opens her right hand, spreads her fingers apart, and remembers how the bantam's thin necks would fit in the spaces, and how she would curl her hand around their soft, honey-colored heads, her thumb stroking their beaks, the feathers between their eyes, calming them, loving them, getting them ready for the sharp twist of the wrist. Penelope on my sleeve. My city is lonely when you go, and you say yours is too, but no man will ever kill himself for the love of me. Yet you insist on the visits, and which of us really can resist the temptation of being indispensable? You think you're tricking me into coming or staying longer than I should, so I let you tell the stories that will define us, weaving threads I can't unravel. I've heard about your fatherless days and know you want to set something loose in this world, a legacy perhaps, to swell up my belly, a force that can be set into motion.
The poetry of Molly Prosser, reading from her book, Rubbernecking. Thank you so much. That was great.
Thank you, Jan. It was so much fun.
You've been listening to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Saturday morning at 6:30 for Prosody, 90.5 WESFM.